workbook of A Course in Miracles, and the other voice is companion material to the text of The Course in Miracles, chapters 1 through 15. Oh, good. I'm glad Lynn's recording good. what I thought we'd do is say hello to Brent and we'll ask him some questions from there. My thought is we'll talk a little bit about his history with receiving the Jeshua material that we just talked about, and go from there. So welcome, Brent. I'll let go of the mic.
Hello, everyone. Here I am. I have tested with Jacqueline before. How about a little feedback? Can you hear me okay? Is the mic working all right? If it's not okay, let me know, and I'll just assume. Okay, a bunch of yeses there. I think that's good. Okay, so a question that has come up and Jacqueline asked me to talk about is how did all this arise and so forth. So I'll give you a little brief history of my life with some of the pieces in there and so forth. When I was 12 years old, I decided I was going to be a Methodist minister. And the reason is that the hellfire and brimstone version of Christianity hit the small town in Vermont where my parents grew up and so forth. And I just literally became terrified of dying and going to hell. So I said, okay, I'll be a minister, and if he throws me to hell, there's nothing more I can do. And that was the plan. So I kind of evolved from that. But for 10 years, from the time I was 12 to 22, I was going to be a Methodist minister and evolved and did a lot of that and was an assistant minister in a church for a year and a half and so forth. I think the reason I chose that initial experience was to become aware of what it's like to be just terrified of God, you know, and that's a scary place to be, and so many people in the world live in that place. By the time I got to be 20, early 20s, and ready to graduate from college and so forth, I really began to realize that the traditional Christian position just didn't make sense. I didn't have a direct answer at that point, so I dropped it and let it go and switched fields to the academic ones I liked. I had chosen psychology, thinking it would help to be a minister, and I switched to the math and physics, which is the stuff that I liked, and went to graduate school for a number of years and then did postdoctorate research and so forth, and really wasn't involved in much of anything spiritual at that time. And then for reasons I don't need really go into, after that I decided to go to med school and started med school. I started med school in 1973, but in 1971, a friend back in Ames, Iowa said, have you ever read There is a River, the Edgar Casey story? And I had not, so I read it and was pretty intrigued and fascinated by that. And I started meditating in 1971, which was the resurgence of spiritual life in a whole different version. So when I was in med school, I would go over to the Unity Church right next to the place and eat lunch and meditate for the hour and then go back and do my things. And so I was just involved with that. And then when I finished my training, I bought a practice from a doctor without knowing it, who was also an Edgar Casey physician. So that was interesting as well. And so I'd been meditating for all that time. While I was in med school, I checked a book out of the library at the med school called Probing the Unexplained. And it talked about a lot of things, such as the secret life of plants and clairvoyance to see the future and so forth. But one chapter was about automatic handwriting. And automatic handwriting is a form of channeling where you just hold your arm still and go into a quiet state and your hand starts to move and it writes words. And there's fascinating stuff for researching all this and so forth. So I was really intrigued by that. In 1983, my dad died unexpectedly following cardiac surgery, so I started doing automatic handwriting with my dad. And that was my first experience of connecting to a source and letting things flow out. And I have a bunch of pages of conversations with my dad through automatic handwriting, and nothing you'd really publish, but I did that. So that was my first introduction, per se. I think sometime in the late in 86, 87, I started, it was part of, no, I'm sorry, in the early 80s somewhere, I was leading an Edgar Casey Search for God group, which is a pattern that Edgar Casey has, and they have books to go with it. And it's a good program, so I was doing that. And I bumped into one of Jerry Jampolsky's books, where he mentioned A Course in Miracles. So I called the foundation and talked to Bob Scutch and ordered the course, and it was 1986 when it came. And when I opened it up, I hadn't even opened it up. I just took it in my hand, and I realized this is where I belong. It was the inner knowing that we all call inner guidance. And so I said to my Search for God group, I'm starting a Course in Miracles group. Does anybody want to come? And most of them came, and we did that, and we're working with that, and so forth. So I started the Course in Miracles in 1986, and it's been part of my life consistently. No matter my public appearances or not, has been a part of my life ever since. In 1989, in February, I heard the little voice, a voice that said, you need to go buy a typewriter because we're going to do some connecting here. So I got an electric typewriter and started doing automatic typewriting. Question was this in Boston. I was in Iowa, as a matter of fact. So grew up in Vermont, went to graduate school, and practiced in Iowa. So I was in Iowa at the time. Anyway, so the voice said, we're going to do this. So I started doing automatic typewriting, where the words come in your head and you just type them out. And I type pretty well and so forth. And I got about 100 pages of stuff. And about halfway through, he said, my name is Brule, Brule. That's all I know, Brule. And I just looked at some of that the other day, and it's really good stuff. I never was guided to publish it, and so forth. But I had that material, and maybe that was practice. And then later in 89, a different voice came and said, we're going to do connecting also, but we're going to work through a tape recorder. And it said, my name is Yeshua. And I am the author of A Course in Miracles. So that's when it all started. So I had the practice with my dad, the practice with Brule. So I would just get a little tape recorder and sit down and be still and let the words flow. And that's what happens when you're channeling. The words just come out, you know. And so I would take those tapes and transcribe them, and eventually they became the first book, which was Journey Beyond Words, which was then published in 1994, and did reasonably well. You know, we printed like 4,000 copies, and they sold out in a year, and the next 4,000 the next year, and the next year. And then I started working on The Other Voice, which was the companion to the text of the course, and I just started doing that, and I got through the first half. And I realized that was what I was supposed to do, but I obviously, as you'll find out, was still operating at somewhat of an ego level. I don't think that's the case when the channeling is going on, but I'm also a human being like all of us. And so The Other Voice came out, and when it came out, Journey had sold about 12,000 copies, and so I assumed, okay, that 4,000 copies would sell out in a few months, you know, and it just didn't sell. And I reacted. One, I was shocked and whatever. And my ego reacted. And so it plugged along and so forth. And still, to this point, it has sold far fewer copies than Journey Beyond Words, even though, in my opinion, it's just as good a quality book as Journey is. Anyway, so I reacted, and I said, ego level totally, and I'm aware of that, and I own it. So do I want to spend 2 years of my life working on a book that nobody's going to read? And the answer was, maybe I don't, you know. So I checked with the source, and the source said, that's okay, and I'm still here. So the source has never left, and periodically I connect and so forth. And the guidance I got fairly soon was that what you need to do is, when the time comes when you are ready to write another book for yourself, and it just flows out of you, then you do it, and you can publish it, and then you won't care if it sells or not. And so that's the place I've been in. And periodically over the years, I say to the source, Yeshua, And Regina says, write for yourself. That's exactly right. Do everything for yourself, literally. And so periodically I'll say to the voice, should I be writing a third book? And it says lovingly, if you want to, if you want to, if you want to, knowing that the time will come. And I've always been aware, and I still am, I think the third book is coming. Exactly when, I'm not sure, so forth. During the 90s, after the books came out, we did traveling and went different places, and someone mentioned Boston, and we'd been in Boston and New York with John Mundy and different places in Florida and so forth. And around 2000 or so, I realized that, that going out and doing those things like that wasn't my joy. I would go out and things would always go really well. People would be really grateful. I get good feedback and ego-wise and so forth. But I'd go home tired. And I realized, okay, so I'm not connecting. This isn't my joy. And so I stopped doing it. So the last thing I did was 2001, and I did a thing in 2012 and one a year or so ago with Regina, and have one coming up in October. But that's about all I've done for all that time. But I'm still staying with the course in my spiritual life and so forth. A couple of years ago, I joined a Course in Miracles group here in town, and I'm part of that now regularly. And I also started another group that meets in my house here, just six of us, and I call it the Healing Group, and we're exploring spiritual things too. And it feels to me like the stuff is kind of pushing the edge and taking the truth that is, but really working with it at the nitty gritty level and so forth. So that's what I'm doing at this point, and I'm having a really good time now the last couple of years or so. So the two books are there. I think a third one's coming, and maybe a couple others are coming as well. So that's kind of the story of my life. Unless I miss something, I will drop the mic right now and see if there are questions or comments, or if Jacqueline has something.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, Brent. I appreciate hearing that comprehensive history. My dad's here taking notes, so I think a lot of your history and his history are the same. A lot of those same teachings you guys came into contact with probably around the same time. There were a couple things I wanted to ask you about. One is you talked about early on what had a real effect on you was this fear of death and fear of hell at the same time. But I really found that fascinating, because I have heard a number of teachers say that this seemed to be the impetus, what got them going, what really got them to begin looking at this whole spirituality thing. I know that Ramana Maharshi had a similar experience. You know, that was his awakening experience, where he was frightened by the idea of death, and then tried to pretend like he was dead, and then had a spiritual experience that stemmed from that. I recently interviewed Tess Hughes. We're going to have on maybe next month for our Sat Song. She said something similar, that this fear of death was a major impetus for her to begin to explore her spirituality. I've heard Gangaji talk about the same sort of thing. So I'm wondering if you have anything more that you want to say about that. Maybe have you gone back to revisit that idea? Do you have any thoughts about that now that you'd like to share?
There we are. Yes, it's really interesting. And this imaginary world that we live in, that we have made up, okay, for whatever reason, is based on fear. And one of the fascinating things about this life is that fear is what drives it, okay? And in a real sense, fear makes us feel alive. And it's interesting, we say, really? Is that the case? And you know that the news programs broadcast negative stuff. They broadcast fear. And people have tried doing newspapers that only talk about the positive or program programs, and they fail miserably because that doesn't kick your buttons. Stephen King is rich because he writes about fear. And so fear is one of the things that triggers us to respond. And so there are no accidents. Everything is by careful design. And so in one sense, having been kicked by fear, which a lot of us do in whatever form, it triggers the pattern we have here to kick our butts to get us going, searching for the truth. So fear, in its own sense, can be a blessing in our lives. And I look back at that and I say, one, I know what it feels like, and I meet someone who's terrified like that. I understand and can talk to them about it. But also, I think it's just that fear really pushes our buttons and gets us to do a lot of things, and I was one of those and other people as well. The answer, of course, is love, and everybody here knows that. So.
Okay, thank you, Brent. And I see that there are a lot of questions on the board. And I want to encourage you guys to type questions on the board and to raise your hand, and I'll turn over the mic and you can ask directly. But let's start with this script is written question. Lynn says, can you talk about the script is written? I also have a question that was asked before today's interview via email, so let me read that question. It says, my question for Brent was that ACIM says specifically that we can collapse time and save thousands of years of practice. Brent says that if we took our life like it was on a strip of film, frame by frame, we will awaken only when we reach that frame, not a moment before, regardless of study or practice or reading or seeking. I guess I'm always looking for consistency in these teachings, so I'm curious about the collapse of time and the script being written. I feel like time is malleable. What he suggests is that it isn't. So I'm going to let go of the mic and let you respond to that, Brent.
This is a really fun topic talk about. Okay, she, I think the gal's name was Lisa. I'm not sure if you're listening or not, Lisa. If you are, hello, and thanks for the question. The Course says that miracles collapse time, but the Course also says in Lesson 158, where it says the script is written, and I'll read a little bit of it, okay? There is a plan behind appearances that does not change. The script is written. One experience will come to end your doubting has been set. For we but see the journey from the point at which it ended, looking back on it, imagining we make it once again, reviewing mentally what has gone by. Now that really says directly, that's the way it is. Okay, your life, it's there and the script is written, and that's true. Okay, but the Course also says that miracles collapse time, and that is also true. And the two seem incompatible. So we have to talk a little bit about time itself. And the first major thing is that time does not exist. In the world of spirit, which is our world of reality, the world we were in when we made the decision to create this world of illusion and space and time, there is no such thing as time. Creative spirit, which is us, which is God, all is one, has a creative impulse, and it's done, just like that. No other options. It is not possible for God to have a creative impulse and then wait in time to see what happens. It doesn't work that way. And the Course says, all of this came and went in less than an instant. And that's simply making that statement, that that's the way it works. So all of this came and went with all of the imagined lifetimes, start to finish, all of it done right now. And that's the only way that creation works. And we were making up an imaginary world with imaginary time, okay? And that includes imaginary lifetimes with a script. Excuse me. And that's actually the way it works. And the Course says that, and the script is written says that as well. So it's just like the films on a movie frame. You look at the, you can look at one frame here, and the frames roll by, and it looks like everything works beautifully. But the frame is already written, and so there you are. Now, what happens if we start exploring what we want to be and who we are and so forth? The Course talks about, and most spiritual teachings talk about, living in the moment, in the now. Okay? And the Course talks about the holy instant. And in the holy instant, okay, what happens is that the past, the Course says, let go of the past. Let go of the past. The past is gone. So in the moment, in the holy instant, the past is gone. Now, it may not be gone in the sense of being aware of those films on the screen, but it's gone in the sense of anything in the past having any connection to that moment, and all belief that the past may have caused this moment, those are totally gone. There's also no concern about the future. So when we are in this moment, what has happened is that time has collapsed into this moment. So when we exist in the holy instant, the now, this moment, okay, we are in a place where we can become aware of all of it as it was created in that moment. Okay? And you can become aware of the imaginary past and the imaginary future. Okay? And you can look at those things, and people do that, and that's what the clairvoyants do. They go to a place where they drop into the collapse of time, look in the future, then they come back into our imaginary space-time and tell us what they've seen, and they've been there. And we all have had experiences like that, where I know I've been there before, I've done this before, because you have been, okay? Because you look at the film, which exists in time as a written script, but which you can access all of, okay, from the moment. And so both of those are correct. And so in the moment, we simply live without ego, without fear of past, without the belief in cause and effect. And that's what time is the grandest illusion that lets us think that cause and effect are separate. That's the ideal thing that lets us believe in separation here, even more than bodies. Okay, time is the grand illusion, it really is. And Yeshua says that in Journey Beyond Words, and it's so. So both of those are correct. And in the moment, we have access to all of those. Now, in that moment, okay, can we as spirit, not as conscious thinking beings, but as spirit, okay, move to a point that looks like it would be in the future in the time script and claim that point for our experience? And the answer is absolutely yes. So what have you have done? Time collapsed into this. Everything is right now, and you can choose in that moment, whatever you want to experience, including something that would look like you've saved thousands of years of your time. And so both are exactly right. Now, there's a really fun thing that I haven't got solidified yet, but it comes from quantum mechanics. And the physicists are basically proving that the Course is right. And that has to be, if they're going to be correct at all. Now, in quantum mechanics, there are two different types of things. One they say is that this is an observer-created reality. And the world exists of possibilities waiting to come into form until someone perceives them, and then they come into existence. Now, this is not the Course in Miracles. This is not spirituality. This is quantum physics, all right? Now, the other thing that's really fascinating is that observer-created reality is exactly right. Good for you. Now, the other thing is that the way the quantum equations work out, and the Schrödinger wave equation and so forth, the world becomes a sea of infinite possibilities infinite possibilities waiting to exist until someone, okay, chooses to perceive one of those possibilities, and then it seems to come into existence. So the fun thing is this, okay? If it's infinite possibilities and I, as creative spirit, move into this moment, the holy instant, right now, then I have access to, as a creative being, because my ego is gone, all of those infinite possibilities, all of them. And it makes sense to me that we can choose any one of those that we want. Now, if it's infinite possibilities, are there an infinite number of possibilities that look like Brent Haskell and that look like Regina Dawn Akers? And the answer is, it makes perfect sense. And I didn't do a full Yeshua thing on it, but I kind of asked the question about, so are there infinite possibilities for my own life? And I could just see the voice smiling as it chuckled and said, so you want to limit God? And I said, got it. So what that means is that if I'm in a world where my script that's written, okay, involves having a terminal illness that looks like I'm going to die, and I go into the holy instant, the moment where I'm spirit again, one of the new possibilities could be a life where the illness goes away and I don't die and live 30 more years, and am I free as spirit to choose that life? And the answer is, yes, I am. Now, could I choose it from within time as an ego believing in time? No way. But if I go to the collapse of time, can I choose that? And I think that happens. And cancer goes away overnight, and people say a miracle, and a medical profession says, whatever, okay? But I think that may be what's actually going on. I don't have any really on it, but all the someone said, Sweet Dream said, all of those possibilities are written in the script, and that's exactly right, okay? Or it also could be that, you know, the whole script of my life is just one of them, and it goes along where I get an illness and get healed from it and so forth and so on. And that could be the one script, and I don't have a definitive comment on that as yet. But in terms of the script is written for all the individual lifetimes in time. When we go into the moment where time collapses, we have access to all of those, and we can jump from points of imaginary past to imaginary future and choose those experiences and save the thousands of years. Both work, and there may be an infinite number of lifetimes we can choose from out there as well. So I will pause now and see if there are other questions.
Thank you, Brent. So I understand you to say that really if we step into this and I think you said future, if we collapse time so that we can step into this future where we're able to access all possibilities, to choose from this world of infinite possibilities. I'm sorry, I looked at the board and I got distracted. That is how we're both collapsing time. We're stepping like into this future world where we're more able to use our whatever faculties in order to choose from among the infinite possibilities. And I'm hoping that I've said that correctly. But if that were the case, then it would preclude this. This idea that I have heard some course students talk about, where they talk about you can't make any other choices than the ones you're making right now. So so whatever I'm experiencing is my absolute destiny, which is actually the opposite of this field of infinite possibilities. I see Teddy has his hand up, but Brent, if you could answer what I have just asked, and then we'll let Teddy ask his question.
Yeah, Teddy's made some really good comments there. Now, it is so difficult not to believe in time. That's one of the major challenges we have. So what I tried to say was, within time, within this imaginary world of illusion, space and time, all of the scripts were created in that instant, and they exist. but there's an infinite number of them. And they exist. And when you're in one of those scripts, as long as you stay locked into space and time, and don't go to the moment, which is what we're all trying to do, but which is not easy at all. We talk about, oh, I felt like I was at the moment, but really letting go of the past totally is a major challenge, and it's not a simple thing. So within time, they are all written, but when we move into actually being in the now, there's no more doing, there's just being. Okay, and all that infinity of things is there, and we have, as spirit, access to the infinity of it all. And Teddy says, like, the miracles are written into the script by the Holy Spirit, but the Holy Spirit is Teddy, and it's me, and it's you. We are, okay, and the infinite possibilities are part of the whole process. And so that's the way I see it, and so both of those are accurate. And the trouble is, it's so hard for us not to believe in time. And one of the big issues is, you know, we think we have free will. Okay? Within this world here where the script is written, do we have free will? The free will happened when spirit created the script. But the only way we can, quote-unquote, exercise free will is to move into the holy instant, where the ego that wants to have free will is gone and it doesn't matter anymore. So a real challenge is, can I decide out of my ego to go into the moment and make a choice and then have that happen and then come back? And that becomes at least an extremely difficult thing, and maybe an impossibility, because it's ego wanting to control the world of spirit. So I'll pause now.
Yeah, thank you for that answer, Brent, and thank you, Alex, for asking that question so well about free will. And now, Teddy, please take the mic.
I hope I have sound. This is sort of a new setup. I'm not entirely sure. So as I'm sitting here listening, and I don't know how this works for everybody, but while I listen, I sort of am in an asking thing, and I'm trying to understand and hear what's being said. And the thing that I'm being shown and looking at is this. There's a difference between choosing for infinite possibility than choosing for possibilities within the ego framework. And the choice for infinite possibility is not a choice for anything at all can happen. It's a choice for infinity to occur or eternity to occur in that instant. And that's when the miracle shortens time. Because that's the only device we have at our disposal, is the miracle for shortening time now. There may be others in the future. But the idea that it is infinite possibility is only because our mind and our heart is infinite. Our soul is infinite. So we're choosing what is possible for our soul to know so that we can know it too. Now, this idea is very similar to what Abraham Hicks teaches about the vortex. It's like the idea of living in the vortex has this feeling and sensation of anything is possible. Anything is possible within this situation, within the energy of what is occurring. Anything seems to be possible. But the only possibility we always have is to choose for what has already occurred. Because we're reviewing this going backwards. All choices within time are choices for time. A choice for infinite possibility is a choice for what is not in time, but for the step out of time. That's why it's infinite. It's not that there's any number of possibilities. It's that we are infinite. We are eternal. That's what we're choosing for. That's the understanding. So it's like with Jesus. Jesus had no longer any time left in his mind. So he was already, in a sense, attached or identified with the infinite. So when it came time for a choice, his choice was made manifest immediately, unlike, well, I have a question, because I think the idea of choosing for infinite possibility is not any number of possibilities. It's a choice for the infinite, not for large numbers of anything can happen. There's a difference there. Infinite is not a large number. Infinite is out of numbers whatsoever. That's the question. So I'm questioning the idea of infinite possibility being large numbers of things being possible, as opposed to the choice for infinite possibility, because we are in fact infinite. And if you don't want me to speak, don't accept my hand raised.
Thank you, Teddy. I'm sure that Brent would like an opportunity. And thank you for asking your question, Teddy. Brent, would you like to respond to Teddy's comment? And then maybe we can move on to some other questions that folks might have for you. I'll let go of the mic, Brent. Great.
Hello, my friend Teddy. We haven't talked for a long time. It's really good to hear your voice. And the answer is yes. Now, one thing that it seems pretty clear to me, but we tend to forget, is that the Course is written to the ego. That's where everybody is when they start the Course. So the Course uses terms which are not appropriate for reality. The Course talks about God being God, my brother being my brother, me being me, the Holy Spirit being, all of them being separate. And then it says, but there is no separation, there is no distance. So it's easy to get caught up in those things. Now, in this world, the Course says loud and clear, you have one choice. Which voice do you want to listen to? And you can play with the voice of consciousness, which is the thoughts we think here, which are by our design a distraction to keep us from knowing the truth of what we are. Or we can listen to the voice of the Holy Spirit, the voice of us, the voice of God, is all the same. And we do that by being still. Be still and know that you are God. And so in the silence is when the truth comes. And in the silence is when all of the time can collapse. And then it moves into this now, this infinite moment right now. And in that place, all of the infinity of existence is there, and it's available. Now, that's mind-blowing. As a person who's thinking and using words, it's incomprehensible. But that is, in my opinion, the way it works. And I threw out the thing about infinite possibilities because that's what the quantum physicists say, and it really makes sense that in that instant of space-time, what was created was an infinite sea of possibilities, one for all the people that live and whatever, and all the things that go, and all the scripts that could be there, and possibly included, and I said possibly, a number of scripts for my own life. Okay, and in the spirit connection where I'm in the now, then maybe as spirit I have access to any of those, and the voice is saying right now, that's absolutely the way it is. Now, if I sit in space-time, believing in time, all of that is lost to me. And my belief in conscious thought is reality. My belief in time is reality. Totally blocks me from experiencing any of that and the miracles that come out of letting go of self and going into the moment. So I don't know if that answered it or not, but that's my attempt, Teddy. And once again, good to talk to you.
Yes. Thank you, Brent. You talk about going into the stillness And I assume in part you are discussing meditation. You talked about a little bit about meditation when you were telling us about your history. And I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about your meditation practice, whether that's the stillness that you're talking about, and what you think is best for a student of A Course in Miracles or of any other path in terms of meditation.
I can do that, but I saw that Jeff Norbury had his hand up, and I don't want to bypass him, so type something in about whether I should go on or let Jeff ask his question. I'm happy to talk about your question, so give me some guidance here, please.
Brent, thank you very much. Sound check, please. Actually, my question that I had was kind of moving towards what Regina was just talking about. I don't know if there are other people who have had the same really amazing experiences of speaking with spirit as a seeming entity outside of ourselves, like the Course is and like your book is. But can we... could you speak a little bit about the preparation, and I guess the meditation, the stillness that takes place as you move into a conversation with Yeshua? And how much does this differ from just your daily practice of meditation? Thank you.
Happy to address those, and they will flow into the same sort of thing. One thing that the Course talks about really early on is thoughts that we think. And lesson 4 in the workbook says these thoughts don't mean anything. And that's a tough one, okay? These thoughts don't mean anything. And the 4th paragraph of that same lesson says, this is a major exercise. And in lesson 10, it says, my thoughts don't mean anything. And 15 says, your thoughts are just images you've made up. Okay? Your thoughts are not the thoughts you think with God. And it's so difficult for us to not somehow believe that the thinking we do in our conscious minds can somehow guide us to God. And the bottom line is, it can't do that. Okay? We made all this up on purpose, and the consciousness, the thoughts we think, are an intentional distraction to keep us from knowing who we are. So, the pathway to knowing who we are, to discovering that we are God, to discovering God, to discovering our brother, to finding love, cannot be found through thinking and discussing. And that comes up a lot. In fact, it was really interesting for me. You know, I got 2 doctorates I've been studying all my life and reading all my life, and the Yeshua stuff starts coming, and it says, this is about experience. Your goal is not to think. And I go, whoa, interesting. So the pathway for us is to let go of all the games we play in our conscious mind, being still. And that's not a new thing. As I already said before, be still and know that I am God. And what happens is we have, which voice do we want to choose to listen to? The words that ramble around in our head and distract us, or the voice of God that speaks in the stillness. Okay. And there's a line in, I think it's the other voice, that says, and how can you hear the voice of the Holy Spirit by being so still that you can hear the whisper of a love that is so great that never would it hold for you anything at all, even the infinity of its own love? And the point is, it's so being so still. So what happens is, and the way we're designed is, when we're not thinking, that's when we're open to being connected to the reality of what we are. Now, meditation is a common way to do that. That can happen, however, in a lot of other different ways. It can happen when you lose yourself in something that brings you joy. In fact, in the script just written, it said, follow the path of your joy. What if your joy is not studying the course? What if it's doing something else? Do it. Okay. In fact, a fun story I heard one time, there was some Joseph Goldstein and another guy were teachers of Buddhism. And one guy was giving a lecture on listening and being still and meditating and being in the moment. And the lady in the front row kept nodding yes, nodding yes, nodding yes. And after he was done, he went up to the lady and said, wow, I saw you nodding all the time. Are you a long-term meditator? And she said, no, I crochet. The point being, okay, that you can lose yourself in anything here in space-time. And when you do that, you become in a place where you can start to connect to the reality of what you are. Now, when we're really still in meditation and really hearing the voice within, then that's the aspect of us that's God. And that is, I think, a way we all have to go to eventually. But can we do it through other things initially? And the answer is, yes, we can. I talked to a baseball player one time, a professional baseball player, about feeling a ground ball. And he was describing a totally metaphysical experience. Okay, And I realized this is also a path. Now, one day he'll get to the course and say, oh, I know all about it. I understand that. And so forth. So we need to get to a point where we lose ourselves, where the ego and the thinking and stuff goes away and we're connected to the reality of what we are. Now, I was meditating for a long time. I've tried different things. I've tried Buddhism and so forth. And I just, when I meditate by myself, I just try to simply be still and be quiet. And I count myself down and just be still and listen. A problem I have is I want to try to direct the stillness from my mind. And that's a big issue for me, is to just shut up. And the voice says, no words. And it keeps saying, no words, just become. I got a thing not too long ago that said, spirit never does anything. And I always want to say, what can I do to hear the voice of God, do to connect? Spirit never does anything. Spirit simply becomes. And that's what we really want to do, is to stop all the noise and all the thinking and just be that which we desire, which we want to experience, which is the oneness, which is harmony, which is peace, and simply be that. Now, being can only happen in the moment. If I say, I want to be this, I'm screwed. The only way is to go right into this moment. So what I try to do is be still. I may set, if I want a cold to go away, I try to set that in my mind, but then I stop all the words and just become a being where there's no cold. Just dismiss it from my mind. If I focus on it, I give it life and existence. It's a matter of just letting it go and being in that place. So that's what I try to do. When Yeshua comes, or when Buddha came and so forth, it's just, I just be quiet and pause, and it's no special deep state, and the words come. And sometimes it's awareness, but the words pour out, and they just happen. And it seems to flip back and forth pretty easily, and how that was, I do not know. I did have the practice, you know, with working with my dad and working with Brule, and I think that was training for the connection with Yeshua, and that was all part of the plan. Interesting comments. One thing I'm playing with myself is working with meditating in the theta brainwave pattern. When we're talking like this and doing thinking and stuff, we're at a beta beta frequency of brain waves. The step below that is alpha. The one below that is theta, and the one below is delta. In my opinion, the theta level is where Carl Jung's collective unconscious is, where we're all connected one to another and where we read each other's thoughts if we're open, where a dog knows if we're afraid, so forth and so on. That's also in the theta place where all of the false beliefs about who we are, which is the definition of our ego. The ego is the collection of false beliefs we have about who we are. They're buried there in the subconscious mind, and I think at the theta level. So I intentionally spend a lot of time in theta, and you can go on YouTube and look up, they're called binaural, which means two ears, binaural tapes, which use frequency differences to take you to theta. I paid a moderate amount of money for some tapes that take me there, and they work okay too, but I do spend time with that as well. So let's see. So my meditation is just being still, trying to listen. I still want to kind of direct things in the world, and I really have a sense that that's possible, to have a desire that you want to manifest and somehow be still enough and connect with it and let it happen in your life. And I'm kind of playing with that one. It doesn't have to be that way. The real goal is there's the peace, and Yeshua Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all these things. And so that's just kind of a fun game. But I try to go to that place and so forth. So that's the way I do my meditation. I don't know if it answers your question or not. So I will I'll stop now and let somebody else comment.
Thank you, Brent. Jeff, I don't know if you felt like that answered your question or not. If not, please raise your hand again. As I said earlier, my father, Jack, is here with me, and he has a question. I'm going to let him ask. And then I know that Lana asked a question a while ago about the script is written, and I do want to get back to that. Yep. I'm going to take this question here with me, and then I see Jeff still has it. Well, I tell you what, let me go back to Jeff's question. We do want to get back to this question on the board about the script is written. I want to stay on this topic until we've finished that up. So Jeff wrote a question on the board. A place I have problems is moving from the listening to the writing or typing. The physical seems to interrupt sometimes. What is your solution to that? I am going to, I hear somebody wrote feedback. I'm not sure what that means. I don't know if that means you're not hearing me. I don't know what the issue is. I am going to, okay, good. Jeff, I assume that's the question that you want followed up on. And Brent, if you could please follow up to that question, and then we'll go to some others.
For me, the pathway is that things work well. Yeshua flows well. Brul flows well. My meditation goes well unless I start to think. And that's a difficulty we all have, and that takes training and practice and discipline, and we have made up space-time like that, you know. The whole thing about space and time is the belief that cause and effect are separate. I practice the piano and practice the piano, and then I learn and get better. And what we do is we learn in sudden impulses. We truffle along, you practice and practice and practice, and one day, there it is. And we've designed our minds that way also. So a lot of it is just a matter of simple practicing and learning how to be still. When I'm doing a Yeshua thing, sometimes I will find myself starting to think about it, and I have to stop, pause, let go, and then it starts up again. and so it's a matter really of practice, and meditation, I think, is a practice also. But it's worth doing because ultimately it's probably one of, if not the best pathway we have to being still and hearing the voice that is our reality that's going to guide us to infinite joy and peace and everything that we want. Okay, so I'll stop now.
Okay, and I think Jack's question here is along the same lines, so I'm going to allow him to ask that. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, the person who was just questioning...
It was Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. The question in my mind is how to distinguish the voice of Yeshua or of even some other being rather than the voice of my own mind. Certainly you, Brent, and Jeff also seem to be very sure that you are hearing the voice of Yeshua. I'm very sure that very often things come to me, clarity comes to me that I wouldn't have thought of. It's not my thought, but it's, again, I have difficulty distinguishing, oh, was that just given to me? I don't know who gave it to me or how it came about. At any rate, I'm having difficulty distinguishing the voice of Yeshua or even being able to identify it as that. Thank you.
Right. And I'll let go of the mic, Brent, so you can answer that question.
Once again, the answer to this is that we are locked into the belief in ego and separation. And the Course fosters that. It talks about God being different from us. Okay. You are Yeshua. There's no other option. So am I. So is Jeff. So is Regina. So is your daughter Jacqueline. Okay. You are God. There's no other option. In a world where everything is one, it is there. And we are so wont to say, God told me this, or God is my father. I am the son of God. My brother is over there. And none of that exists. I got a thing on forgiveness a few months ago, and Yeshua starts off as, yes, I am Yeshua, but I am also you. So there is no difference between the inner voice. It doesn't matter whether it's Yeshua or me or God or whether it's Jeff that I'm connected to through that collective unconscious. That could be as well. And the only thing that matters is we have a feeling inside. It's an inner guidance. It's not something you think about that tells you if it's true. And we can make little judgments in our head deciding about, is this a true, valid thought, so forth. Now, sometimes, if a person has, say, practiced enough, you can be still and words come out that seem to have enough clarity and enough organization that they end up in a book, okay? But so what? Okay, that's all it means. It doesn't mean anything different or special, and there's absolutely nothing unique or special about anyone who channels, whether it's Regina or me or anybody else, because all of it is the same, and we're all connecting to the thing that is just the oneness, and that's all. Now, I'll share with you, I think. I'll take a couple minutes and share with you. I mentioned this guy, here we go, this guy Brühl, and I'm talking about him as if he is different from me, and I just said he's not. But you hear my words? Do you hear my belief system that says, oh, I was reading Brühl like he's different from me, so I caught myself right then. It's the same, okay? And he talks about not the thoughts you think with God, but real and eternal thoughts. And he says, here are three criteria you can check to see if your thoughts are in that pattern. One, is it truth? Okay, which means truth is only about oneness, harmony, love, peace. It's never about negativity, fear, anger, and so forth, all right? And he also talks in that point about, he says, and the oneness is such that, okay, truth never has any problem being shared with the entire universe. So if you think a thought that you would not be willing to have broadcast to the entire universe, which it is automatically through the collective unconscious, whether you like it or not, but to have it on television or whatever, if you have a restriction on that, then you're not yet there at the real truth part of that. Okay, so he said that's step number one. Step number two is, does your thought involve judgment of any kind? Any kind. Because we've created here a world of imagined duality for the purpose of, okay, helping us to discern who we are. And it's the way we're playing out the game. And judgments of good or bad, right or wrong, left or right, you know, sick or poor, sick or healthy, all these things, those don't exist. All there is experience. And if I judge, especially if I judge something to say, oh, this is not good, this is not okay, I made a mistake, not appropriate. The only thing that exists in the world is love. And if we actually believe that, then everything in existence is love and is a cause for celebration. And if we can't see that or don't think that, then we have something to let go of and to step in the further one. Okay? And let's see. And the last one was, if you have any reason whatsoever to need to defend your thought. And the Course said, if I defend myself, I'm attacked. If there's anything you would defend about your thought, which means preserve it unto yourself, which demands and asks for separation, then it's not a real and eternal thought either. So those are just three things he says. So if you want to play in your head with, am I really connected to the source? Okay, then those are things you can ask. Is it true? Am I willing to have it be openly shared? Is there any judgment involved? Is there any defense involved? And so for what it's worth, those are things you can play with if you want. Okay, I'll pause.
You can say it.
Hey, thank you so much, Bryn.
Okay, and yeah, that was awesome. We were scrambling to get that written down here. A couple of things. One is, I do want to go back to Lana's question. If somebody wants to, if somebody could retype that on the board, and I think her that question goes back to the script is written question that we were talking about earlier. Somebody, I might be able to scroll up and find it. But related to that, Brent, I heard you say a couple of times that I know that you channeled a specific writing entitled "The Script Is Written," and I'm not sure that everyone has had an opportunity to view that. So I was wondering if you could tell us where we might go to find that. I don't know if it's something we can find on Regina's website. I don't know if she's posted that for us before or not. But, okay, so the question is, could it be that the script established is infinite? The script made up by the ego along with time, space, is healed and undone by forgiveness. As lessons are learned, time collapses until all lessons are learned. What is left is truth, which is infinite. Okay, and Lynn says she can post that script as written. So I'll let go of the mic so you can answer that question, Brent. Thank you.
I'll address Lana's in a moment. The first one is that, no, I've never published the Brule stuff, and I have a couple of copies here at home, and that's it. So there's no real place you can go to get it. When I was reading it, just hadn't read it for a long time, I was struck by, wow, this is really good stuff. So maybe I'll be guided to edit that and put that out in the world too, and we'll see. We'll just see if that happens or not. Now, Lana says, could it be the script established as infinite? Okay, and if the quantum physicists are right, then when God, the oneness, which is Lana and Regina and Jacqueline and Jack and myself, okay, created this world, okay, we created a world of infinite possibilities because we are infinite. And that's what the physicists say, and that's what I was suggesting may actually be true. So there may be an infinite number of what look like lifetimes named Lana. And in the place where the script, where time collapses, we're free to choose any one of those. And one of those might be, my cancer went away and yesterday it was here. Okay, and the world looks at it and tries to come up with explanations, but maybe that's what happened. So that's right. Now, she says the script is made up by the ego, and the answer is that's not correct. Okay? Everything was made by us, created by God. It is a creation of me, you, us, the oneness, God. And we did it on purpose. And we can talk about why do we do this? Why space-time? Why does it have this form? We can debate about that. And it's fun to talk about that kind of stuff, and we can do that. But it was created by spirit, okay? And I like to think of it as, I call it a game. It's the game of fear. And we come down here to experience fear, to overcome it, in the process discover who we are. And that's a really fun game, okay? And I'll make one more comment about that. So all of this, the whole pathway, the pathways that look like the script is written and all these things and the whole format here was designed by us on purpose. There are no accidents of any kind in the world we have created, all right? And the way that we can come to know who we are is to have time collapse so we have access to it all, so we learn all of it, so we can jump into truth, and we experience infinity, which is the oneness of what we are. And just to know that you're boundless is staggers your mind, but it's greater than any richness or fullness or anything you've ever had. And that's why the Course says knowledge isn't possible. You can't go there when you're still in space-time. So all of it's on purpose, and it just flows out that way, and it's by careful design, and we're doing these things. I'm making one more comment here. I got a thing from Yeshua a few years ago, and I entitled it, Why the World? And I was kind of saying, so why do we do it like this? What's going on? I want to know. And the voice starts talking, and it says, well, in the world of spirit, okay, is there anything to learn? Do you get born as a fledgling spirit and go through kindergarten and then go up and graduate through high school and then maybe through college and then do a rotating internship or whatever, and then you're graduated and you're free to create? Okay, so the Sorcerer's Apprentice by Disney, it might be a case of someone who was trying to use his power before he was free to do it. You know, is that the way it worked? And the answer is no. Okay, spirit is complete, done right now. So spirit is complete, okay, and knows everything. There's nothing to learn, okay? Is there anything, is there any spirit that needs help? Here in space-time, we say, oh, I want to help my neighbors. I want to share this with them. I want to do good. I want to bring goodness to the world and love and so forth. And that's one way we learn to love ourselves, and that's totally appropriate. But in the world of spirit, does anybody need help? And the answer is, of course not. Okay? And that can be one reason the Course says your only job is to accept the atonement for yourself. Follow that pathway. So, if nobody needs to learn anything, if there's nothing to learn, and nobody needs any help, what's the purpose of existence? Just sit around and be boring. Okay? So, maybe what we do as creative spirits, okay, is just spend infinity beyond time using our creative power for the fun of it. Creative spirit at play forever and ever beyond time. And one day we're sitting up in heaven and Lana says, I got a new game. It's called space-time. How's it work? We're going to be separate. And Teddy says, not possible to be separate. And she says, I know, but we can make it so it seems like it is, and goes on with the game. Neat game. Anybody want to play, you know? And so it really may be no more than that. And it never happened, and it's an illusion. It's just like kids playing out in the backyard on a Sunday afternoon, shooting and killing each other and robbing and playing cowboys and Indians, and they come back in, and Mom says, did you have a good time? And that's the only concern. All right? So that may be the way it flows, you know, and in which case all of this we designed. Ego didn't make up the script. Spirit made up the script that included the ego on purpose. And that's my best thought of why and how, and that may not be accurate at all. But it came from a thing called, from Yeshua, called Why the World. I'll pause now.
Thank you, Brent. I appreciate that, and particularly that last comment, because I wanted to ask you about that, about how you thought that we should be spending our time. And I think you've done that. So we have about 20 minutes left, and I'm sure that there are some other folks out there who have questions. So now would be the time to ask them. I don't think that I've missed any on the board. But if you want to ask, please put up your hand. As Brent said, he doesn't get out much, so if you don't ask now, you might not get the opportunity. I do want to remind you, though, that Brent is going to be one of our featured speakers at the fall retreat. So you may want to consider signing up so you can talk with Brent some more there. I see Modern Mystic, you have your hand up. I will let go of the mic.
I think you might have covered it, Brent, but I had to go out of the room for a little bit because I had sound issues. And so when you're speaking about the script being written, I think, do you mean the spiritual script? I'll give you the mic.
And the answer is absolutely not. There is no spiritual script. When we decided to make up space-time and all this stuff, whether it's a game or not, okay, it took, because there is no such thing as time, and we wanted to imagine the existence of time, it took a script that seemed to flow through time in order to make the illusion seem real. And that's part of the plan. So only in space-time is there a script at all. Okay, and that was all created in that instant, okay, before we ever did the thing. And like Yeshua said, it's all done. And to play out the game, you simply go down and mentally review what's gone by, and the way consciousness works and the way we've set it up, that lets us do that. In fact, the prologue to The Other Voice is my version of how it all works and how consciousness is and why it came to be. So if you haven't read that ever or haven't read it for a while, you could go back and look at that. Now, in spirit, in the reality of what we are, life is total freedom. And Journey and The Course and The Other Voice never stop saying, love is freedom. You are totally free. And as spirit, okay, the only thing, there's no reason to ever judge or defend or resist anything that anyone wants to experience. It's simply a matter of we celebrate everything. I have a creative impulse. It's done, and the universe becomes aware of it and celebrates it with me. If it's a game of space-time, you may want to play or not, and so forth, you know, whatever. Let me make one more comment before we go on, and that is, it's really tough to think of individuals existing within the sea of infinity when everything is totally one. And I think it's like the hologram. I think we live in a holographic universe. And a hologram is an image where it forms the total image, and all pieces of the image are necessary to complete the image for it to be what it is, but any one small part of it, like any one pixel on a TV, contains within it the sum total of all of the information of the picture. And I think that's the way the universe works, okay, that there are these little things that seem to have aspects of individuality, and that's a spirit that can have a creative impulse, not separate from, not possible to be separate from, you, I am the total sum of the universe, and yet I can seem, excuse me, to have a creative impulse somehow on my own, but I'm not separate at all. And it blows your mind, and it's hard to comprehend it, but I think it's kind of like that. So a creative impulse can come, but in the world of spirit, what we have is an infinite number of those little pixels, if you want, that are inseparably part of the oneness and can't ever be separate from it, but which can have creative impulses that flow out of them. Blows your mind, but I have a feeling that's the way it works. I'll pause.
Wow, yeah, that is mind-blowing. Thank you, Brent. Jeff, take the mic.
Thank you very much. Oh, I can't believe I get two shots at this. Someone the other day was asking me about the course, and I tried to explain it to that person in the sort of the same language that we're using here. It wasn't speaking to the person, and what this person finally got back to me with was, well, it sounds like it doesn't, if this is all true, then why do you even bother getting up in the morning? Brent, why do you even bother getting up in the morning?
Okay, and this is the fun part, okay? Suppose the script in time is written. And as long as I stay in space-time, I'm stuck with that script. I can go to the holy instant and maybe choose another one or change it, rewrite things and experience all of it, so forth. But as long as I'm in space-time, it's there, okay? And if you read the script as written, he says, now how do you start to connect with the reality of what you are? You can do it in your silence, but another way to do it is to follow the path of your own joy. Because in doing so, that's when you, like it or not, lose yourself. The ego goes away and you just become. And that takes you, like it or not, into the moment. So the purpose here in space-time, I think, is for us to literally follow the path of our own joy, no matter where it takes us. And that will guide us to the place where we one day say, ah, okay? For instance, I talked to this baseball player one time. I worked with the AAA Chicago Cubs in Des Moines for a bunch of years, and I'd sit next to the big league scouts and visit with them. It was really kind of fun. So I spent one game talking with a guy who played third base for Cleveland. He told me it took him 5 years of being in the big leagues before he knew how to field a ground ball. And I said, what do you, tell me what you mean? He says, well, you have to feel everything. You have to feel the grass and feel the wind and feel the pitcher and the batter, and you just know what a place inside, and you can be moving before the ball is even hit sometimes, and you have to just know that. He said sometimes the ball will take a bad hop and come up here and just sit on your shoulder and you take it off and make the play. And I said, doesn't that hurt? And he said, no, your whole being just absorbs the ball, you know. And I said, Woody, do you know about Zen? And he said, no, what's that? And I said, it doesn't matter. Okay? Because he was following the path of his own joy by fielding a ground ball on a baseball field. And that takes him, and the lady said, I crochet, okay, and whatever. So you get up in the morning to follow the path of your own joy. And one of the toughest things to answer for any of us is, what brings you joy? And if you ask that yourself, most people don't know. And for a long time, I didn't know. But for the last couple of years, I've been coming alive. And this little healing group I have is about how does faith actually work in our lives? And that's what I'm going to be talking about in October as a work in progress, not the finished product. But my experience with exploring what faith is and how do you become and what is it and all the things I learned about it and so forth. And it's just, it turns me on, okay, if you can tell. And that, I get up in the morning so I can pursue that, okay? And if I get up in the morning and say there's nothing here, then I either check out or say, okay, well, let's look for something that makes my heart sing. And so I think really that God's will for me is perfect happiness, and what you want to do is get up in the morning and say, what makes my heart sing? And if it's fielding a ground ball or crocheting or studying the course or whatever, then, or playing the piano, then you go for it. And the whole universe will celebrate every second in which you are feeling the joy of following your own heart. That's why you get up in the morning.
Wow, I can feel that. That's awesome. Thank you, Brent. It's really cool because I was meditating before we started, and the words that were coming to me were gratitude and fearlessness, and I can just see how that fits in with this idea of following your bliss. So, thank you so much for sharing that. It turns out Jack here has another question. He thinks it might be a little bit convoluted, but I said, go for it. So here he is.
Thank you. It occurs to me that this may have been explained and I've somehow missed it. But let me throw the question in at least. It occurs to me that that is the I am that I am. And the Course speaks of this, and I'm not good at quoting the Course, speaks of the asking a crazy question. How does it put that?
Brother ask you?
I am that I am, ask the question, what would it be like to be separate? That's not a direct quote, and somebody can straighten me out on that. But nonetheless, it was something similar to that. According to what you're saying, Brent, and I totally agree, the answer was given. It was done, period. It took no longer than the time that it took. There wasn't any time involved. The question was asked. It was done. So it was done, but not necessarily acted out physically. And what I'm trying to get at here is the script was written in the sense that, okay, the question was asked. Here's all the infinite possibilities, and that's the answer. It's done. But we decided that we wanted to spread the answer out as an experience. The script is not necessarily, I'm asking this as a question, but I'm going to put it as a declaration. The spirit is not necessarily written moment by moment what Jackie Poole life is going to be. The script is written that certain things are going to happen because those are the possibilities. And Jackie Poole may have picked up on acting out a portion of that or even acting out a whole line of that. But I also suggest that we have the possibility of improv, changing what I'm going to do within these possibilities. And therefore, somebody else may have to pick up and finish that script. But with the 6 billion or 8 billion, however many people we have, it's all going to be acted out. Actually, it already has been. Is that a possibility? Or have I confused the issue?
I'll turn that mic back over to you, Brent.
Okay, I think it looks like I have the mic. The real struggle here is about the nature of time. It doesn't exist. Okay, and I said it before, maybe I said it too fast, but spirit does not know of time. It's incomprehensible. Okay? Everything happens and it's done right now. So if we want to imagine being separate, which is what this world is about, just pretend, and maybe that makes it a game, maybe it's not, whatever, then it had to be all done. Every detail of this life, Jack Poole, is done. And you're born into space-time, and as long as you stay in space-time, in the ego, not going to this holy instant, to the moment, to where you can really experience what you are, you're stuck with that script, and that's the way it is. Now, we are desperate to believe that we have free will. We know at some place inside we're free and have free will because nature of our being as spirit, and that was part of Jeff's answer and question, we are absolutely free. and we know that. Now, I've read a lot of articles about the script as written, and they all end up figuring out some way to justify why we have free will. And in time, in this particular lifetime, we don't. It seems like we do, and we're playing it out that way for the purpose of experience. The only way we can escape from that script is to move to the holy instant, the now, the moment, and then you connect with infinite spirit that you are, and also connect with a world of infinite possibilities, whether it's quantum physics or not, an infinite world of possibilities. And at that point, your free will as spirit, sky's the limit, okay? But within time, right here, it's the way it is. And that's what the Course says, black and white. The script is written. It's set, okay? And it is, unless we, okay, free ourselves from that by going to the holy instant, which is letting go of ego, the past, belief in time, all those things. And when those are gone, then we just blossom into beauty and wonder and joy and excitement and freedom, because that's the nature of what we are. I will pause now.
All right. Thanks, Brent. Teddy Jack says, hey, you guys know each other, so. All right. So we just have a couple of minutes left now. Again, earlier, by the way, Brent, I was actually asking about the text of that, I want to call it an article. It's not an article, but that text of the writing, the script is written. And seems like I had it at one point. Maybe you gave it to some of us who went to the Miracles in the Mountains thing. But we'll, I guess we'll see if we can find that and maybe publish it with this talk. If you have no objection to that, you can let me know that. Because I'm gonna turn the mic over to you. We have 2 minutes left, and I'll just let you leave us with whatever you want to leave us with. I want to thank you very, very much for you being here tonight. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. It's been fun visiting with all of you. I see a script here that says, Regina says, I don't think I have it, and Sweet Dream says, I can post it with this recording. As far as I know, it's on the Internet out there, like a lot of the things I have are, and I'm fine with that. So if you just search for the script is written, or maybe my name script is written, I think it pops right up, and you can find it. One thing I can do is Sweet Dreams, I'm not sure if that may be Lana, but anyway, yeah, she can send it to Regina, and I'll contact her and make sure she has it. And if not, I'll send it as an attachment, and she can put it on the website of Awakening Together, so it's available for anybody that wants it. So, so that would be fine. Okay. Let's see. Looks like it's pretty much 7 o'clock, so maybe it's time to stop rather than fill something in for 1 minute. So I will pause unless you want me to try to fill a few more seconds.
No, that's not necessary, Brent. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to say anything that you had left for you. But as you say, the clock has run out. It's just been really wonderful sharing with you tonight. And I am going to let go of the mic now. And I assume, Regina, you'll go right into the special members meeting. I'll let go of the mic.
Yeah, hello everyone. First of all, I just want to say thank you very much, Brent, for coming and spending this last 90 minutes with us. It's really, really wonderful. There are a lot of people out there I know who would love the opportunity to speak with Brent Haskell, and we are very blessed that we have you here with us. So thank you so much. And please tell Sydney that we said hello as well. And thank you for, tell Sydney thank you. Thank you for sharing her husband with us. And now, as Jacqueline mentioned, we are going to move into our special member meeting. We have a special member meeting now, and then also next Sunday at the same time. And the reason that we're having two special member meetings is because there's a lot of change happening. And when there's a lot of change happening, it's really helpful to communicate as much as possible. If you don't communicate as much as possible, some people just don't hear, so they don't know. But also, you know, rumors can get started, things that aren't exactly true, and that kind of thing. So we have a member meeting tonight and a member meeting a week from tonight at the exact same time, which is 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the member meeting tonight has four primary topics that we're going to look at. The first one is that we are going to a reduced sanctuary schedule beginning on September 1. And so I will talk about that. Also, starting on September 1, ACIM Gather is going to reopen with a new part-time